So we're going to start the show this week with something that is not Big Ten related, but is just very important in the world of college football. And of course, we are talking about the disappearance of 3-2-1 Noel. And if you don't know who 3-2-1 Noel is, what are you doing? You're not in the right college football spaces on Twitter. 3-2-1 Noel is a Florida State fan who, well, he went all in on his team after week zero. And he tweeted this. He said, "If Florida State loses to Boston College this weekend, I will eat dog poop out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it. Book it." Florida State went on to quickly go down 14-0 to Boston College. And as soon as they did, everyone on Twitter went to go to 3-2-1 Noel's profile and give him you know what about it and be like, "Yo, you better do this. You better do this." Mysteriously, 3-2-1 Noel's account had been deleted. He ran. He's a coward. He disappeared from the face of the internet, Corey. No Twitter. No Facebook, no Instagram. Every account that he had has been deleted. And there's a guy at Barstool. His name's Jack Mack, the journalisming guy, if any of you know who that is. But he's actually hunted him down through a group chat of people that this guy knew. And he says he's in process of trying to negotiate some type of deal on what the actual punishment is that he's going to do here. But he's trying to rectify the situation for all of us, because we're missing out here.
Rectify. Funny choice of words. Okay, first off, why on earth would you even make that claim? See, this is biblical, okay? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. I don't make these types of bets because I know that somewhere there is a chance that I could be wrong, and I can't do that. I don't want to eat dog poop out of a red Solo cup with a spoon. So therefore, I'm never going to give myself an opportunity to do so. So 3-2-1 Noel, not only are you a coward, you're also an idiot. Because you should just always have a healthy fear that whatever you do could potentially fire back on you. So, and what is he negotiating? Like, he's negotiating with Jack Mack?
Jack Mack like DM'd the guy. He messaged him on Snapchat, I think. And then he ended up getting his phone number, so he texted him too. And I guess Jack Mack also knows who his fiance is. Like, he's found his fiance on Facebook.
Oh, he's not married. He can't get married. There's no way.
The man is engaged.
How can he get married if he's going back on his word now?
Grace, if we were engaged and I took a video of myself eating dog poop for a bet and posted it online, would you have married me? She said no.
No, that's not the thing. I'm saying he said he was going to do it, and then he deleted his socials. How on earth are you going to get married? Like, how does your word mean anything?
Oh, you're saying his level of commitment. Yeah, wouldn't you question my level of commitment, babe, if I said I was going to do that and then I didn't? She said she would question my sanity if I did.
Well,
she doesn't get it.
she's not a college football fan.
She's not a college football fan. Now she's yelling at me about it.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
Alex is in the doghouse.
I am in the doghouse. I'm not eating poop though because I didn't make that bet.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. She would question it if I made that bet. Did you hear that? Did you get that in the mic?
Holla, we want prenup. We want prenup. Yeah.
Oh, so hey, if we get any updates on the situation, we will keep you updated. We'll give you the updates on where 3-2-1 Noel is at with paying off this debt, but it's a debt to all of college football society. So to say we deserve something from him, a statement or something, is, well, it's the least of it. But that's not what you came here for. You came here because if you love Big Ten football, and if you love Big Ten football, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Make sure that you're subscribed wherever you're listening on Apple or Spotify. You follow us on Twitter at B1G Banter Pod, and then on Instagram at B1G Banter. Corey, say something nice to the listeners, buddy.
You know, I was thinking that, you know, here at Big Banter, we love the fans, and if we had to, we would eat dog poop for you. But I'm not going to say that, because that would mean I would go back on the statement that I just... we would do just about anything that wouldn't require us to eat feces or other things out of the question. Because fun fact, and this is completely... We are off the rails right now. I have an irrational fear of the human centipede. Don't know why. Never seen the movie. Somebody gave me a vivid explanation of it. So I'm not eating poop ever. That's just not happening. But now it's in the ether. But anyway, thank you for letting us ramble, fans. You give us this avenue to do so. And we hope that in exchange, we can give you some wonderful listening pleasure to your ears. Thanks for listening every week. We do appreciate it.
All right, so we've got a packed show. We've got a fan question we're going to start off with, and then you have waited long enough. We have a Stallions documentary reaction from Corey and I, and then we'll get into the week one reviews. Who is the most impressive win? Was it Penn State? Was it USC? And who are you more concerned about between Michigan and Oregon? But we will start with you, the people. We got a fan question from Teague Cuttrell on Instagram. He asked us, he said, is the forward pass a sustainable method of scoring for Iowa, or is it just a trick play for them?
Good question. Well, if you base it off of history, it seems like it's a trick play, truly. Because if you don't have some white boy with the sauce returning kicks for Iowa, then you don't really have an opportunity to score. But they dropped 40 on Illinois State, which is cool. That's more than a lot of teams in the Big Ten can say. TBA, to be announced, to be decided.
How mad do you think Kirk Ferentz was sitting at home watching Iowa score 40 points in the second half?
He was like, this is not how the Lord intended this beautiful game to be played. We're supposed to run it 12 times before we even think about dropping back to pass.
I think he despises the forward pass, and I think he's even hesitant about the forward run. I think he's 50-50. I think if he could win a game with zero offensive yards and four special teams and defensive touchdowns, he would do it. That would be his ideal scenario to win a football game.
There was a guy before the College Football 25 game came out that he was going to win a national championship by only punting and using Iowa's special teams.
That is a man who is about that life.
He's about, and Kirk Ferentz probably watched every single second of that YouTube series.
It may, you know what? I don't know what Brian Ferentz is doing right now. That may have been him. That may have been him. He's got a lot of time on his hands now.
Oh, no. No, he's at Maryland, is he not?
Shut up. Is he really?
Yes, he is.
What is he doing there?
He's like,
is he a defensive coordinator?
I think he's an offensive line coach, I'm pretty sure.
No way he is not. Can you please look that up and confirm it for me?
You got it. Ramble a little bit.
That is wild. Okay. Hey, Teague, thank you for the question. You are definitely our most consistent and engaged fan with us. We really appreciate it. And if you ever have fan questions, follow us on Instagram. We post them on our stories, like the little question blurb. You submit them. We talk about them and you get mentioned on the pod. So it's pretty cool. Okay. While Corey is doing some research, I'll get into the Stallions doc from my perspective. So if you haven't seen it, which I'm guessing most of you probably have, if you haven't seen it, don't go into this expecting new information. Excuse me, because nothing in the Stallions doc is new, or none of it is anything that we didn't know or speculate before. So whatever your opinion is on the situation going into the Stallions doc, coming out of it, you're going to have the same opinion, but you just might think, you're either going to come out thinking Stallions is an insane person or that he's like one of the coolest just flat out football dudes on the planet. But your opinion on the morality of the situation and the punishment Michigan could get is probably going to be the same. So a couple of things I found interesting, I guess. The reporter from Yahoo, I think it was Dan Wetzel, who was appearing in the doc towards the end and even a little bit in the middle, made allusions to the fact that he made like Freedom of Public Information Act requests, or so, however that's worded, to a lot of other teams, and alluded to the fact that there are potentially other schools who have really deep ties into this sign stealing stuff and a similar operation to what Stallions was a part of, and that, you know, if you did some more digging, you might find some stuff, the same stuff that was happening at Michigan, that's going on at other places. So that was something I found interesting that he alluded to, because he works for Yahoo. He's not a message board guy. So I don't think he would say that if there wasn't a little bit of credibility to it. So that's one thing. I think the second thing is that, you know, people are pointing to like Connor Stallions getting a game ball from Harbaugh. It's like, oh, Harbaugh knew. I don't think you'll find many Michigan fans who would disagree with the argument that that Harbaugh knew that Connor, like that was Connor's thing. But I think there's still no proof that Harbaugh knew the way it was happening. And the way it was happening is the whole issue. That's the way the rule was broken. It wasn't that Connor had the info. It was the way he got the info. And there's no way to prove that Harbaugh knew the how. So, I didn't come away thinking that Harbaugh knew the how. I guess third thing. The point still stands that Connor was taken off the staff and Harbaugh was suspended for the most difficult part of their regular season schedule. Like, I just find it really funny that the entire beginning of that season, everyone kept trashing Michigan for how soft their schedule was. And then all this Connor Stallion stuff comes out and they're like, oh, they were cheating the whole time. That's how they did this, blah, blah, blah. When we had Connor for the easiest part of the schedule, he was taken away. And then Harbaugh was taken away too. And they went through the hardest part of their schedule and still won. And people want to take the Connor broad brush and paint it over the entire season, when factually you cannot do that. So I've maintained that position from the start, that one, Connor was gone for the most difficult part of the season. And two, I don't think you can say that it had a significant competitive advantage, because there was evidence, and articles being posted during this investigation from Sports Illustrated and the like, that other teams had Michigan signals and that they traded those signals before a Big Ten championship game. You just heard Arkansas's coach about a week or two ago go on a whole rant in a press conference about how sign stealers are on every staff, and he calls up people to get signs, or has in the past. So, like, I've maintained the same stance that if the only argument is the way Connor got the signs, I don't think there's a whole lot of competitive advantage being gained here. If everyone is calling the people that they know and they're watching the game tape and getting signs this way and that, so everyone has all the same info, Connor just got it a slightly different way, and the way he got it was through iPhone footage from row 50. I'm not going to throw a fit about that and say that the entire program needs to be given the death penalty. I'm just not going to do that. You're not going to convince me that that's a big enough competitive advantage to taint the entire national championship season. So that's what I thought. You're not going to come away from the Stallions doc thinking much differently than you go in.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I won't labor on much else. Number one, Brian Ferentz is an offensive analyst for the Maryland Terrapins. So there's your answer there. And then for the doc, I mean, it's going to be a he said, she said. If you want to take it from an unbiased approach, like, if you're not on Michigan's side, Connor Stallions is a liar. You can't take anything that he says seriously. If you're on Michigan's side, it's like, okay, let's hear him out. Let's see how this happens. I think, like, the earlier that you're into the documentary, the more truth can be pulled from it. Him talking about his experience at Navy, and he just going to the sidelines and he's like, oh, I can pick this up. Like, this is relatively easy. And then showing you how the signs are stolen. And then he dives into the underworld or the underbelly of sign stealing, which apparently is a huge thing. And then that's when it's kind of like, okay. Because there was a line where he said, like, oh, my family members that I gave the tickets to just sent me footage. And it's like, I didn't really need it, but they still gave it to me. It's like a Christmas present that you don't want or something like that. And I was like, But like, that's what you're being accused of, and people have a lot of that on you, which necessarily isn't breaking the rules. It's just a gray area. What's going to get them is the being on the Central Michigan sideline, which I believe the NCAA had confirmed, which no one in their right mind would be on Michigan's coaching staff, say, hey, yeah, go do that. That's a good idea. And the fact that they can't connect any like trace back to that kind of tells you that, you know, whether you think he's being truthful or not, nobody was telling him to go to that sideline. So the rogue staffer thing, you can that still holds up. The one piece of information, and then this is the biased piece that I'll throw in there. When he was doing the deposition with the NCAA at the end, they asked about how they got his information from his computer, and the NCAA didn't give him a clear answer, saying we can't talk about that right now. And the lawyer that he has apparently represented Johnny Manziel and a couple other big name people against the NCAA. I would like to know if any new information came out, I would like to know what happened there, but I don't think we will until that NOA comes out. So is it the death penalty? No. Like, and if you really wanted to take away wins, okay, fine. Take away the wins that he was a part of. That means you can't take away Michigan State, Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State, Alabama, Washington. You can take away six wins, but they would still be the national championships. And if you take that away, that's unprecedented. And I think you could have a court case, and that's like not the over-exaggeration. It's like, how are you going to take away something that the thing that you're being accused of wasn't anywhere a part of it?
And number one, they can't take it away because the college football playoff is not sanctioned by the NCAA. It's not an NCAA run tournament. So they can't take away the national championship anyways. They could take away the other wins that aren't a part of the playoff. But to your point, Connor wasn't there. Like, what's your case? So yeah. To your point, last thing about the like, oh, how did Connor's information get into the hands of the NCAA? There were a lot of like message board conspiracy theories about it was someone from Ohio State. Like, it was Ryan Day's brother that hired a, you know, PI to go get it and whatnot. So it was a bunch of Michigan fan theories, for lack of a better term. It would be really interesting though, because that would be against the law, right? That would be against the law to violate someone's personal info to, influence a criminal investigation to be started, right? It would be really interesting if that was how this all got started, because Connor broke rules in the way he got the signs, but the signs weren't the problem. And the evidence on Connor's laptop is not the problem, but the way the information was gathered is also the problem. So a lot of pointing fingers back and forth. Go ahead.
Are you willing to go to prison for your favorite school?
I am not willing to go to prison for my favorite school.
Me neither.
So Connor is better than me for that. I'll give you that all day. I think Connor Stallions, I don't even think I know, he loves Michigan football more than I do.
American hero. He's a Marine.
He's an American hero. And he served his country and his football team very well. But in all seriousness, I mean, I think the most they're going to get is a suspension on Sharon Moore and then a fine to the school. I don't know. We'll see with the text reveal and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I think if you are still one of those people that believes he offered a significant competitive advantage on the sidelines that other teams are not also benefiting from, I think you're a little I think you might have your head in the sand. You ready to move on? Okay, let's move on. So let's get into week one. And we're going to start with the good news. The most impressive teams from this weekend. So first, we had Penn State going on the road to West Virginia. And they, I mean, taking care of business isn't an understatement. They took WVU behind the woodshed and beat them 34-12 in convincing fashion. Drew Aller had a swag about him. Like, he was feeling nasty. in that game, and he looked like a completely different Drew Aller from what we saw last year, which I don't think is any coincidence that he has a new offensive coordinator. They had someone pop at receiver in Harrison Wallace, who led the team in receiving. I'm going to pull up his stat line right here. Harrison Wallace had 5 catches for 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. Aller threw for 216 and 3 touchdowns. Nick Singleton does what he does. He had a long of 40. That was a touchdown run, and he had 114 yards and averaged 8 a carry. And I think this is interesting, too, because I think we're going to see more of this from Penn State. Drew Aller was their second leading rusher with 44 yards. He ran for a bunch of crucial first downs for them. That offense was popping, and the defense did not take a step back, at least against the likes of West Virginia. They looked fast. They were pursuing the football like their hair was on fire. Their tackling was elite. I thought the defense might take a bit of a step back because of losing Chop and losing Manny Diaz, but at least against West Virginia, it didn't look that way. And let me say, too, week one, for all of these games that we talk about, it's not a draw conclusions week. Like, you're not going to know what a team is, or you're not going to know for sure what a team is in week one going forward. But this is like a keep your eye on stuff. Keep your eye on this Penn State offense. Can they maintain this explosion against elite teams? And can they maintain that level of defensive aggression against elite teams too? But I think if you're a Penn State fan, you couldn't have been happier with how week one turned out.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then it's always going to come down to the quarterback play, especially with Penn State. I'll say this. If we're not going to draw conclusions, but if that's the Drew Aller that plays the majority of the year, Penn State might have something special locked up in this season. He was great. He was making throws that he wasn't making last year. And like you said, I mean, you hit all the points. Crucial first down rushes. He was smart with the ball. There was that like little fumble miscommunication thing, and he was jawing at the ref during that. And I was like, okay, come on, Drew. But then he's like, all right, fine. I'll just take care of it myself. And then he proceeds to ball out after that. That huge rain delay, I think, helped Penn State in a weird way, because it's like West Virginia was already losing. And it's like, oh, now we got to wait 6 hours to get back out there. It's kind of like, okay, let's just take our lumps and get the heck out of here. Impressive that Penn State was able to do that on the road, especially with a line that was moving in all sorts of directions towards kick. But hey, confident Drew Aller is a confident Penn State team.
Yeah, he was. He was absolutely feeling himself, unlike we've seen in the past. So we're going to do these two games simultaneously and then talk about both these teams, because the next most impressive win in this conference happened on Sunday night, where USC beats LSU 27-20 in Vegas. And Lincoln Riley, he actually said after the game, he was like, that was a good Big Ten football win, which is a perfect quote for how it happened, because the Big Ten rubbed off on him. They started playing some freaking defense. They were tackling, which we hadn't seen USC do in a very long time. And I think it's kind of funny that their new defensive coordinator, Lynn, actually came from UCLA. He was UCLA's defensive coordinator last year, and he made that defense look serviceable, which that's all you need. If Miller Moss is going to do his thing and Lincoln Riley's going to have that offense just firing on all cylinders like he normally does, just make the defense serviceable. We've been saying the exact opposite about a team like Iowa, right? Like, their defense is so elite that if their offense was just top 50 borderline, they'd be awesome. And we might be looking at the same thing with USC. They also broke Brian Kelly after the game in the press conference, which was hilarious. But I was, I had USC +4, but the way that they won was really, really awesome.
Yeah, Miller Moss kind of was nice with it. And I was listening to this game on the radio because I was driving. And they were talking about how he was a guy who stayed through. I think he was in a quarterback room with Slovis and Caleb Williams, and he waited because he wanted to play quarterback at USC. And I think he's a graduate now with 2 years of eligibility. And he made the most of his opportunity in his first regular season start. I would be pretty confident if he were my quarterback going through the rest of this season. Good game, just all around. Even LSU, I mean, I again, we're trying not to draw conclusions. Are these the two most elite teams that we're going to see? No. But are they two really good teams that have outside shots at the college football playoff now because of this game? Well, not as much LSU, but USC for sure making the statement win and then righting some wrongs. I will say the offense, obviously, I mean, the jury's still out. I don't think you're going to be as dynamic as you were with Caleb Williams. And the problem with USC was once they played a buzzsaw of a defense, the bottom fell out. And then you put pressure on your own defense by keeping them on the field, regardless if they've improved or not. You're going to want to shut them down, put them in a, I guess, like a vacuum, and really test that defense. That's how you would beat this USC team. And when they went to Notre Dame a couple of years ago, that's exactly what happened. They forced Caleb Williams into some, you know, uncharacteristic mistakes, and they're able to walk away with a victory. Let's see what happens when they play a really good defense. LSU, good team, good defense. Are they a great team, great defense? I'm not so sure. But very impressive from USC in a game that surprisingly was 50-50 as far as fans go. They were talking about the U in Vegas. Like, oh, the LSU side's really, really loud. And then the USC side, really, really loud. So it was like, it was the perfect neutral site game for these two teams. Both fans were involved.
Yeah, to your point about a way to beat USC going forward and when they typically run into those buzzsaw teams. In this game against an LSU team that is also coming off a horrible defensive year where they kind of overhauled the staff and everything, USC only averaged 3 yards a carry in this game. And if you were just box score watching, you might actually think that LSU won the game based off of total team stats, but USC was definitely in a bend, don't break defensive mode, like getting a couple of red zone stops. But if they can't run the ball a little bit better against the rest of their schedule and control tempo a little bit and clock and get those really key short yardage downs when they need them, that could be an issue going forward. And we cannot talk about this game without mentioning Kyren Hudson. The dude had two catches that could both be put up for catch of the year already. The first one was definitely the more insane, but the second one, the one-handed one down the sideline when Miller dropped it over the linebacker and underneath the safety, that one was sick too. And then he took a targeting hit on that play and held onto the ball. That man is going to make some electric plays for this team. And he's obviously a favorite of Miller Boss. I mean, he caught five catches, 83 yards, no touchdowns for him though. And then you had their running back, Woody Marks, who, fun fact, we found this out during the game, he gets called Woody because he just loves Toy Story. That's his thing. And I respect the crap out of that.
Should have ended it after Toy Story 2. Should have never made 3 or 4.
They should have... Never mind. We're going to table that discussion because I like 3, but 4 doesn't exist in my mind. My son will never see it. Okay, but who of the two? So Penn State and USC, I think... without a doubt, the two most impressive wins of the weekend from the Big Ten perspective. Whose were you more impressed with?
In a weird way, I think it's Penn State, just because we've seen how close they have been in recent years in putting the pieces together. And I think really the question has been, what's the quarterback situation going to look like? And if you can get that locked down, then you'll have a very effective team. Because Penn State is kind of a team that reloads on the defensive side of the ball. Yes, they lost a lot. We've talked about it. They lost Chop Robinson. They lost, you know, plenty of other defensive players that made an impact last year. But they're always near the top of the Big Ten as far as defense goes, at least since Franklin has been there. So I think just with the way that Aller played, that the hype that always seems to come Penn State's way is going to have a little bit more weight this year, even with a lesser opponent. But I would agree, or I would say that Penn State is the more impressive team thus far, because with USC, yes, they showed some defense. Are they going to be able to overcome what hurt them in previous years is when, again, that exact same thing that we just talked about 2 minutes ago. Better defense, what's going to happen to that offense? And what's going to happen to that defense that isn't as strong?
I'm going to go with USC on this one. As much as I was impressed with Penn State, they kind of did the same thing to West Virginia last year. Now, it was at home, but and the offense didn't look nearly as smooth as it did this year. But they had a couple explosive plays in the pass game last year, one that I'm remembering specifically. But USC, they did this in a way that we haven't really seen them do it before. Like normally if USC wins a one possession game, it's probably in the 30s, maybe even in the 40s. And this one, we saw them getting stops in the red zone. Now they gave up a ton of yards, no doubt. And Nussmeier for LSU played lights out and was
cooking.
He was cooking all night. But you saw a dramatic improvement from the product that you saw last year. So, and if Miller Moss can just continue to let his confidence grow, and you can continue to rely on playmakers like Kyron and Woody, then USC, they might have something to say about this college football playoff, and I did not expect that going into this season. So I would go with USC, but two huge wins for the Big Ten, two huge wins for those programs to get the conference, not the conference season, but just the season in general, started off on a good note. So let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. We're going to talk about Michigan and Oregon. So Michigan beats Fresno State 30-10, which if you just saw the final score, you're like, oh, Michigan did what they should have done. Spread was about 21. But Michigan's O-line, they were making some substitutions on the O-line in the middle of the game, which is not a good thing because it wasn't because of injury. They were kind of plugging and picking apart pieces to kind of see if anything worked better. Not a good sign. Donovan Edwards struggled in this game big time. And he is going to have to be an elite contributor to this offense in order for them to be elite. His stats on the night, 11 carries, 27 yards, average 2.5 a carry. Meanwhile, you have the backup, Khalil Mullins. He had 15 carries for 92 yards and average over 6. Donovan's got to get going. It's nice that you have Mullins there, but Donovan has to be a huge weapon for this team to be elite. And then you have the quarterback battle. Ish. They're in like a two quarterback system right now where everyone thought Orji was going to be the guy. He's not. It's Davis Warren, which you love the kid. You love his story. And if you don't know what his story is, you're going to hear it on game day this weekend, I'm sure, when the game day comes to Ann Arbor. But can Davis get you over the top? Right? Because Orji's got elite playmaking ability with his legs, which is what you love if you're a Michigan fan and want to see it on the field all the time. But you saw him throw that one pass where he literally left it like 10 yards short in the dirt. And it was like an easy rollout, like comeback completion where literally if the receiver was standing 5 yards closer to Alex Orji, I don't know that it hits the receiver's feet. That's how bad of a throw it was. So you saw that and you were like, oh, that's why Davis is in there. So they have some questions for sure. And it's not like Fresno's a cupcake of cupcakes. Like they're a decent football team, but there are questions for Michigan going forward. Do you agree?
1,000%. I'll speak to Warren. I think there's a mixed bag, which I'm a little bit surprised on because I didn't think he played all that great. He threw into triple coverage on that one interception when it was essentially like everybody in the stands was saying, we need to throw it down deep. And then we get a turnover. First play, we give it right back because it's like, oh, we're just trying to stretch the field. We're trying to go down. Bad decision. I don't care that Samaj Morgan had beaten those guys and he was past him, but you still have to get him the ball, and Warren couldn't do that. Felt like Warren was staring down receivers a lot. I was at this game, so was just watching quarterback play. And it was one or two reads, and he was locked in on a lot of guys. I don't know the exact percentage, but an uncomfortable amount, I would say close to 50% of his completed passes were of staring down receivers. Don't know how you fix that in 1 week. Donovan Edwards, I think it's pretty safe to say he's, what, a fifth-year senior now or a fourth-year senior? I don't really know. It's four. He's a fourth-year senior. He is a north-south runner, and he needs a hole. But the great thing is if you get him a hole, 40 yards. No problem. No doubt about it. But it's why he and Blake were so good together, because Blake was the guy that could bounce off of a couple dudes and then bust it outside, do whatever you need to do. He kind of wear down the defense, and then you could start getting those holes, and then Edwards would pick up that yardage that way. He's got the speed. I know they said thunder and thunder. He tried to bulk up to be the feature back and to have a little bit of that ability to absorb hits. But I think the more that you get Khalil Mullings involved, which you obviously did towards the end of the game, the more that you're going to open up some space for Edwards. Edwards, as it is right now, is a complimentary back. But that can be a really good thing because of his skill set and his ability to bust through the holes. So maybe I'm not so concerned. It's just that, okay, the offense is going to operate in the same way that we're going to try to control the line of scrimmage and run the ball. And if you do that well, you will find success and you will win a lot of games doing that. But how are you going to do that with question marks at quarterback? They had Orji for a couple of option reads, which was great against Fresno State. But if you put him in the game against Texas, they're going to say he's not passing the ball at all. And it's just going to be read. You're going to be able to, that might work for one or two plays. So, I mean, there are a lot of questions. As a Homer fan, are you hoping that they were hiding the playbook from Texas because they're looming around the corner? I think that's everybody, every Michigan fan is holding their breath. Do I believe that? I don't know. I would go on the side of no. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Texas, to see how far off they are from this team that just won a national championship.
So let's go to the next most concerning performance, and it was out in Eugene. Idaho and Oregon were in a nail biter. Actually, these games happened at the same time. So I was like, I was so glued into the Michigan game, and I thought Oregon would have a field day with Idaho. I didn't even realize late in this it was a 3-point game, and they ended up winning by 10 by the skin of their teeth. Because I wasn't watching for a lot of it because I was glued in on Michigan, what I was reading and what I've been hearing from people, O-line was the trouble for Oregon. Now, they had an injury or two in the offseason that I think they're going to get one of these guys back midway through the year. At least that's the hope. But you saw it in the box score too. Averaged 2.9 yards per carry as a team. Now, it was kind of strange, though, because when you look at the stats, now, again, box score watching, the Jordan James had 15 carries and averaged 6.3 a carry. And then they had another running back, Noah Whittington, who had 14 carries, so only one less carry, but only averaged 2.4. So do more of those carries need to go to Jordan James? I don't know. But regardless, 2.9 a carry is not going to get it done, and you're playing Idaho. Let's think about that. You're playing Idaho. And then Dylan Gabriel, based on, again, the box score, you think he has a great game. He completed 41 passes, but a lot of those were around the line of scrimmage, bubbles, screens, short stuff. So they were literally dinking and dunking their way down the field. Probably, or most likely, because of those O-line struggles, right? Was he not having the time to run the plays and run the offense the way Dan Lanning wanted to? I mean, Oregon, second best odds to win the Big Ten going into this thing, and to come out of week one looking like one of the most disappointing teams in the conference is not how you want to start the season.
I'll keep it brief with them because I think with the yardage that they had, regardless if it was thinking, every team is trying to escape this first week, regardless of who the opponent is. You can make that argument for everybody. You could even say Ohio State struggled a little bit with Akron. I mean, the first half, it was 17-3, but then they blew the brakes off of them because that's what good teams do. But Idaho was still, even with those dinking and dunking, they gave up a ton of yards, specifically passing with Dylan Gabriel. So at what point do you say, okay, we have this game under control. We're just gonna do screen passes. We're gonna do little slants, and we're just gonna cat and mouse them to death because we know that we've got the talent. We know that we're better than them. And we know that if we need to, we can turn a switch up and then keep it going. So maybe that was the game plan. I don't know. But it didn't seem like that game was ever in danger because of how much success they were having dinking and dunking, even with their offensive line woes. So you're one-dimensional and you're still getting all that yardage. It's just a level. It's just a level. We're better than them, and we don't want to. We don't want to open the playbook, I guess. So I'm not concerned with Oregon that much.
So of the two, are you more concerned about Michigan?
Yeah, I think so, because of how intricate their offense is, and maybe just because I'm a Michigan fan and seeing that, you know, this is the first time in like three seasons where they haven't just exercised their will onto an opponent. They tried. They tried to just run the ball. I think they ran. It was like that Ben Bredesen, like fullback motion 8 times. And it was the same play. And they ran it. It had success 40% of the time. And then most of that 40% came at the end of the game where, you know, Fresno's defense was just exhausted. And that's where you saw the offensive line take over. But that was a 6-point game. Fresno State goes down the field, scores a touchdown, and kicks a field goal. This game, that you're in the danger zone as the defending national champions. So I don't really know. I would say Michigan. Although I don't have any concerns with their defense, I think they were great. They picked on Will Johnson a little bit, but then you saw the pick six, and that was just Will Johnson being Will Johnson. Yeah, so bit up in the air. I guess maybe I'm not so concerned with Oregon, and because I'm of my fandom, I'd be a little bit more concerned with Michigan.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you were wondering where the third pillar of our trio was, he just arrived. Ethan, welcome in, buddy. I know you had a late, rough night. Oh, we need that echo cancellation. There we go. Yeah, we know you had a late work night. We're just getting into the thick of things. We just got done talking about Penn State, USC, Michigan, Oregon, so we knocked down the big ones. Let's go to probably the biggest one. Let's talk about Ohio State, boys. 52-6. Corey, I'll let you take this one first because you mentioned this game a little bit already. What were you feeling? What were you seeing from them? Because like you said, a little bit of struggles early, but they kicked it into gear.
Everybody was talking about, you know, what's the biggest difference between Kyle McCord and Will Howard. And it seemed like every Ohio State fan that I talked to was like, Will Howard has, you know, run capabilities. He has a little bit of more dynamic offense to his game because he can take the ball, tuck it, and run. And I think in the first half, that's what you saw. You saw Will Howard being able to stretch plays with his legs, which is something that you did not get to see Kyle McCord do because he was as true as a pocket passer as you get. And I think that was something that Ohio State's been missing for, I don't know, since Stroud was in the mix, because Stroud didn't really run it all that much unless he absolutely had to as well. They struggled a little bit beforehand because Akron had a mobile quarterback as well. He was leading the team in rushing, but he got injured. So their backup was in the game. And I think they fell into the same trap of like, okay, this is Akron. We're Ohio State. We're just going to run simple plays and we're going to figure it out. And they did that for the first half. And it's like, well, it's a little too close for comfort. It was 17-3. Then they just turned it up. Their freshman receiver was Jeremiah. What's his name? But he balled out.
Jeremiah Smith. He might be the best wide receiver in the country. He is by far the best wide receiver in the Big Ten. It's not even close.
Where do they keep getting these guys? Where?
Not from the toilet store. That's for sure. These wide receivers that they run through Ohio State, it is like, it is wide receiver U. And for a while, LSU had that claim. It's Ohio State. 100% it's Ohio State. They have the best wide receivers, the best talent that they send to the NFL, bar none.
He's making Emeka Ogbuka like clean his cleats. That's how freaking good he is. And people talked about Emeka Ogbuka being a first-round pick last year. Like Jeremiah Smith, he could not play for the next 2 years. and he's going to be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. He is, you book it. The kid is going top 10. He's that freaking good.
So very rarely do we have this conversation about college kids, but every now and, or I'm sorry, college football athletes, very rarely do you look at someone and you say, he could have gone straight from high school to the NFL. I think if they could have gotten him in and added, he would have had to add some weight for sure. But if they could put 15 pounds on that kid, he could go play in the NFL right now, right now.
Jeremiah Smith, who is a true freshman, and Carnell Tate, who is a true sophomore, both had more receiving yards than Emeka Ebuka. That's how deep this team is at wide receiver. And then not to mention they have Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. Like the talent is, oh my gosh, it's just overflowing.
Can you give me a quick rundown of the teams that you already talked about, please?
We talked about Penn State, Michigan, USC, and Oregon.
Okay. I'm going to do a very, very fast rundown of those four teams.
Yes, go for it.
Penn State might be the second best team in the Big Ten. I don't know how you can have a stat line like what Oregon had and beat a team like Idaho by 10 points. Looking at the box score and looking at the final score makes no sense, but it happened. And if you're Oregon, that has to worry you. USC, I mean, because of who you played and because of the way you played them, you immediately say playoff contender.
That's exactly what Alex said.
Immediately you say playoff contender. Like that, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like they just went from USC didn't play any defense last year to, listen, was the defense perfect? No. Was there lots of holes in that passing? They made Nussmeier look like a pro quarterback, but it was a bend don't break mentality. They got in the red zone and they made plays. And it reminded me a lot of the Michigan team of the, I believe it was the 20, I want to say it was the 2019 Michigan team that like let everyone in the red zone, but then no one scored touchdowns. They gave up a ton of yards, but they just didn't give up touchdowns. So if USC can be that, they're going to have the offensive firepower to absolutely be a playoff contender. Now, their schedule is pretty brutal. They play a lot of tough games, but LSU is one of them. And listen, they're 1-0. So quick rundown on USC. Michigan, this is the way I can best describe it. If you are a Michigan fan and the panic button is covered by like one of those plastic covers and it's the big red button, you flipped it up and you're now the meme of the guy who's like sweating, wondering if he should smack it or not, but you haven't smacked it yet. And nor should you. It was a quarterback who was making his debut at quarterback. They weren't playing a cupcake. They're playing a team that is going to contend for the Mountain West and contend for a playoff spot. So you didn't play a horrible team. Did you make some pretty major mistakes, and are they correctable? Yes and yes. But I think that there is definitely reason to be worried, but there is also reason to say, I'm going to wait and see. And the reason I don't feel that way about USC is because of who they did it against. USC went out there and showed out. And same thing with Penn State. Penn State went out there and absolutely dominated West Virginia.
All right. So, okay, we got Ethan caught up. Good to be back. Ethan, any thoughts on 3-2-1 Noel and not eating the dog poop yet?
Wait, what?
No, tell you. Say it ain't so.
You're lying. The Florida State fan who didn't eat the dog poop?
I have no clue what you're saying.
Stop it right now. Boo.
Ethan's a boomer. He's a boomer.
Boo. Dude, it's all over. Scott Van Pelt talked about it on SportsCenter last night. There's a Florida State fan who, after the Georgia Tech game, said on Twitter, and he's a very like big Florida State account, he said that if Florida State lost to Boston College, he would eat dog poop with a spoon out of a red Solo cup and take a video and post it on Twitter. And after they went down 14-0, he erased all of his social media accounts. He's gone missing. He's literally MIA.
Wow.
And everyone is like on him about it. And there's a guy from Barstool who like got in touch with him and like got his cell phone number. And they're like, he's talking to him, being like, dude, you got to eat the poop. They're calling it the poop curse. That if, unless he eats the poop, Florida State will be cursed until he eats it.
Florida State's season is already over, so you might as well at least wait until the end of this season after your coach is fired and then eat the poop to reverse the curse so that they hire the correct coach.
Can we just talk about this for 1 second? Florida State somehow in week one managed to go 0-2 in conference. How is that even possible?
Okay, I need to ask a question. Here's the question of the week. Are you guys ready? What is more absurd? Florida State being 0-2 in conference play before week two even starts, or Oregon having the most absurd stat line ever? I believe Dylan Gabriel was 41 of 49 with 380 yards passing and 2 touchdowns and only beating Idaho by 10 points. Which of those is more absurd? And I mean this genuinely. Please answer that question.
It's got to be Florida State. It has to be. Because usually a week zero game isn't like conference, but nope, it was. So you go to Ireland, you get beat with a sack of potatoes, and then you come back home and you get beat by a bunch of book nerds. The starting quarterback of Boston College was quoted after the game. He's like they were interviewing him. He's like,
tomorrow.
He's like, I go to Boston College. I'm going to be in class tomorrow. You just got beat by a bunch of nerds, Florida State. Get out of here.
What are you going to do tomorrow? I go to Boston College. I'm going to be in class tomorrow. That was a great line. That was a fantastic line.
All right, back to your regularly scheduled programming of Big Ten football. Okay, Ohio State, I feel like we covered all our bases. I mean, they crushed Akron. They did it late, but Will Howard looks awesome. Jeremiah Smith looks awesome. We will see what they do going forward. Also, announcement, we are going to pivot and move the picks from this episode to a later episode this week. So that one will probably come out Friday, is what I'm guessing. Episode 1 will probably be Thursday. Episode 2 will probably be Friday with the picks. Okay, let's go to, I guess the Big Ten rubbed off on Lincoln Riley and USC, and apparently the Pac-12 rubbed off on Iowa. They beat Illinois State 40-0, and a lot of that came in the second half. At halftime, it was 6-0. But as far as Iowa is concerned, 40 freaking points. That's how much I'm used to them scoring in an entire season, and a wild stat that they posted during the game. In the second half of that game, there were 3 touchdown passes to wide receivers. In all of 2023 and 22, there were 5 total. Absolutely wild. Kirk Ferentz was throwing everything he could at his TV watching from home. He had to be furious. Cade McNamara looked pretty good. The defense was per usual. They were awesome. This could be interesting to watch, to say the least, going forward.
I can't believe that I'm saying this, but I did not watch the game live. But after watching the highlights of that game and seeing the throw, because I was like, okay, it's against a bad team. They didn't play well in the first half. But watching what they did and the throws that Cade McNamara made in the second half, I was like, is Iowa going to be a problem? That was like the honest to goodness thought that crossed my mind. Now, this is week one. It's week one overreactions, right? This happens every single year. You look back on them by week eight and you're like, I can't believe I thought that about this team, right? The only one that I'm sure I'm not going to change my opinion on is the fact that Florida State sucks, but they're not in the Big Ten, so that's fine. As far as all the Big Ten teams go, I'm still holding out full judgment on all of them. Honestly, except for, I think, USC. But Iowa was up there as well. I think the three best performing teams in the Big Ten week one, now that we have gotten to Iowa, the three best performances in this order were USC, Penn State, and Iowa. Those were the teams that I think, if you are just talking about solely basing it on performance, those teams are 1, 2, and 3 for me.
But here's the reason why: USC being able to play a solid defense against an SEC team. Then you have Penn State, who is able to get consistent, solid quarterback play from Drew Aller. And then Iowa is impressive because a wide receiver caught a touchdown pass in the second half.
Cade McNamara played very well in that game. He played very well.
There's levels to this. You know what Cade has to stop doing, though? He has to stop throwing the ball into the helmets of his offensive linemen. He did that again.
Yeah, that's very true. Also, I would probably punt a baby to have Cade McNamara come back and be Michigan's quarterback right now.
Maybe.
Especially if it was Alex's.
I would also punt Ethan's baby.
We'll punt them to each other and we'll both just fair catch them.
There we go. And then Cade McNamara will come and win us a national championship. Okay. Next one on the docket. This one is going to be not so nice to talk about. I have some strong opinions. I thought Michigan State looked horrible. They beat FAU 16-10. I'm not going to pile on Aiden Chiles. The only thing I'll say about Aiden Chiles, dude, you told us to bet the over, and some people may have trusted you, and those people were wrong, and I think you owe people some money. But aside from his horrible call on the bets, I didn't like Johnson Smith's game plan, if I'm being honest. Like, there was no getting Aiden eased into the game. Like, let's be honest. Aiden is not the most experienced transfer. Like, he played sparingly at Oregon State behind DJU. And Jonathan Smith, the first offensive play for Michigan State, it was a play action rollout and then throw across the field to a deep post crossing route. And it was an interception. What are you doing? You've got a young quarterback, a completely new team. Get them in a rhythm. I hated the way Jonathan Smith called this game, even though I said he was a really good hire. I think this game plan was a huge miss by him. And Michigan State, they better clean up the penalties and they better clean up the turnovers, or else this season is going to go south very, very quickly for them.
I'll never take off the rose-colored glasses for Michigan State ever again. Michigan State, this was your one chance to prove something to me, where I said, I'm not going to just be an angry, bitter fan against you, and you let me down. I'm never making that same mistake again. No way. That's all I got to say. Unless they got to prove it. They got to prove that they've gotten out of the Mel Tucker chaos that had that program, at least in the second half of his tenure there. And I still think Jonathan Smith will be able to do that, but you're in the Iowa needs to prove it to us to cover a spread situation until you get there. So I agree, Alex. Play call was about the worst that you could get for an 18-year-old starting quarterback. Be better, Michigan State. Not getting any credit from me.
I'm filing this away under I'm still wanting to wait and see on Michigan State. You have to have a little bit of grace. A lot of similarities can be drawn from Michigan you know, new coach as a head coach, you know, new staff. Obviously, the game plan was not perfect. I think there were a lot of parallels to draw. The biggest difference is the expectations for the teams are vastly different. And if you're MSU, you still ended up winning the game. And you know that you are probably going to lose at least 5 games this year. And I think the goal has to be to go at least 6-6. So that is still very much on the table and very obtainable. Now, again, same thing as Michigan. We're going to learn a lot more in week 2. It's a game where you're an underdog, and can you go out there and perform, and can you rise, you know, your level of play? Can you bring up your level of play? Can the play calling get better? Can the offensive line play get better? Because MSU's offensive line play did not look improved at all from last year. It looked horrible. Their starting running back, just like Michigan, should probably be on the bench, and the backup should be starting, because Michigan's backup in Cleo Mullings had the better numbers, and Michigan State's backup, oh, of course, his name just left my mouth.
He was the guy who had the long touchdown run.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Let me get you.
He looked like the way better running back.
K-Ron Lynch game. Adams.
Thank you. Yes, K-Ron. He absolutely looked like the better running back. So a lot of things to figure out for MSU for sure. But I think I'm going to withhold judgment just yet.
I'll mention really quickly, just because I mentioned the turnovers and the penalties. Michigan State in this game had 3 turnovers, and they had 12 penalties for 140 yards. Not a recipe for winning whatsoever. And I think going forward, the penalties are probably a stickier stat than the turnovers. Turnovers happen sometimes, but not every team gets called for 12 penalties once a year. So we got to keep an eye on that going forward, because if either of those are trends, that's not a good sign. Okay, this is going to be the last game that we kind of dive into a little bit deeper, because people, there are 18 freaking teams in this conference right now. If we spent that much time talking about every game, you'd be here for 2 hours, and we're just not the podcast that just going to do that.
The Big Ten is 17-1. We're going to talk about the team that gave us the one.
Ethan was not here for show prep. We are talking about Minnesota. You freaking ruined a perfect Big Ten week. A perfect week. You know how fun that would have been for us? You know, at least these other teams, even if they looked bad, they won the game. Minnesota, you lost, and you ruined a perfect week that we could have rubbed in the SEC's face all year long. And you know what? You couldn't make a field goal, could you? You couldn't make a field goal. You also couldn't protect the quarterback.
I don't want to hear about the missed field goal. I'm sorry. I'm on the precipice. I'm on the precipice.
Ethan, you're about to jump off the boat.
Yeah, take the floor is yours. Just say what you're going to say.
Okay.
About the man.
Because I want to justify it a little bit first, because people who are frequent listeners to our show, they know how I feel about PJ Fleck. So I want to give it a little bit of a justification here. If you went on social media after that game was over, no one was talking about the kicker. Nobody with half a brain was talking about the kicker. Everybody was talking about PJ Fleck and the way that he coached that game. Everybody was talking about how poorly coached Minnesota was throughout that game. The bonehead play calls, the I'm smarter than everybody, so I'm going to run the ball on 3rd-and-7 and 3rd-and-6. And get stuffed at the line of scrimmage because we haven't been able to run the ball all game long. It was bonehead call after bonehead call. And it felt smug. It felt like an I'm smarter, I'm better than everybody mentality. And I mean, I don't know why I was somewhat convinced that Ethan Calla McManus was all of a sudden going to, you know, show up and be this, you know, quarterback that's going to whatever. But this team looks so in disarray.
You're thinking of their starter from last year.
Yes, I'm sorry. No, the guy who came in, the kid who started,
Max Brosmer. Yeah. Yep.
I thought he was going to come in and things were just going to magically be different. No, they still have the same coach. They still have the same play caller. It's just there is no situation where losing that game with how bad, and I do mean bad, North Carolina played, and they were playing on the road. Should you ever lose that game? Ever. And PJ Fleck found a way. Yes, the kicker missed the kick. They had a chance to win the game. Guess what? You're in charge of recruiting those kids. So you got a kid who missed a short one and a medium one, and it lost you the game. It's not even about that. Even if he would have made the kick, I still would have come on here and told you how awful PJ Fleck coached in that game. It would not change one iota. It's almost a good thing that he did miss, because it drives home the point that much harder.
The only thing that could have made this better for the three of us is if one of us had a ticket and parlayed every Big Ten team money line. That just would have been. Can you imagine that ticket? You start the week 0-1 and you're like, I probably wasn't going to hit anyway. And then every other Big Ten team wins.
Did you guys see the guy with the 24 pick parlay?
No.
24 picks.
All money line?
No, 24 picks. This just reminded me of it. The last leg was Florida State money line.
Shut up.
It was
$5 to win $55,000.
Oh my God.
And the last leg was Florida State money line. He did hedge. He did hedge a ton of money because he got plus odds on the hedge, huge plus odds pregame for Boston College to win.
He should also have to eat the dog poop.
But anyways, I'm sorry. But yeah, that just reminded me of that.
Corey, do you have anything to add on Minnesota, or you want to quickly go through these other games?
Nah, I don't think Brosmer played all that bad, but I think Ethan's right. PJ Fleck's seat is currently the core of the sun in heat levels.
All right. Okay, let's rapid fire through the rest of these guys. Maryland beats UConn 50-7. That's what you should do to UConn. Purdue blanks Indiana State in a heated in-state rivalry, 49-0. Boiler up. Indiana gets a win over FIU 31-7. And let's be honest, any win for Indiana is a good win. It's a good win. Kurt Cignetti.
I was going to say, I thought that one actually was encouraging, because I think their defense actually played really well. I only watched the highlights of the game. But a lot of the highlights in that game was Indiana's defense making some plays. So kudos.
Northwestern ekes out a win over Miami of Ohio 13-6.
Boys, we got to go. We have to go to a game there this year. We have to go.
Because they're only going to play in that stadium, what, 1 year?
Yes. And then they play two games at Wrigley as well. So take your pick, Alex. This is your team.
Wait, they're not my team anymore, guys. I haven't even worn that shirt since the last time.
They're your team. Stop it.
They're not my team. Go Wildcats. UCLA also ekes out a win over Corey's Rainbow Warriors 16-13.
The Brotherhood.
Corey, is UCLA the worst team in the Big Ten?
yes. Question mark. We'll see who wins the toilet bowl. I think UCLA and Minnesota play this year, don't they?
IDK. All right. Washington beats Weber State and covers 35-3. Illinois blanks Eastern Illinois 45-0 in another heated in-state rivalry. And you know what? Let's just end the show with a nice treat from New Jersey. Corey?
That is football.
Ethan Calliagmanis rises from the grave that is PJ Flex rowboat and crushes Howard 44-7.
I'm so sorry to Ethan Calliagmanis for misassociating him with the incorrect team. He left and got better. The other kid came in and got worse.
He hated PJ Fleck.
Oh yeah, because wouldn't you hate a coach that never let you throw the ball? Was like, no, we're gonna keep running it. We're gonna keep running it, coach. We're down by 30. Yeah, but we gotta establish the run.
You gotta run to set up the pass.
I this is gonna be the year. I've gone off on Minnesota and PJ Fleck in the past. This is going to be the year. I already know. They're going to lose a game that's going to tick me off so much. I am going to blow a gasket.
I cannot wait. I absolutely cannot wait. Okay, so we're going to stop the episode there. We are moving the picks to a second episode because we don't want to make a two-hour episode that you guys have to sit through. So we're going to divvy it up, make us a little bit more palatable. But anyways, thank you for listening. Again, make sure you subscribe wherever you're at, Apple or Spotify. Follow us on Twitter at B1GBanterPod, on Instagram at B1GBanter. And hey, we'll see you next week or later this week. Peace.
Bye.